Hey everybody, Jack here, and probably most of you already know what I'm about to say, but I have some very unfortunate, tragic news. On Monday night, we lost Riley Gale, singer of the band Power Trip, also friend of the show, and in fact, listener of the show too. He's been on here three times. I've considered him a good friend, and I don't know. Everybody that knows Riley is completely shocked, and I don't think anybody. We're all devastated. I got the news, man. I got the news Tuesday, and just like immediately, absolutely broke down. I just was just bawling, crying, and didn't stop. Dude, I didn't stop crying till I went to bed. I was just crying. Which is crazy because, I mean, I've lost people before. I've lost friends, family. In fact, this isn't the first guest of the show that we've lost. This isn't even the second guest. It's just crazy. But Riley is hit me particularly hard, and I think a lot of people feel the same way. So I wanted to do an episode for Riley. Specifically, this is a Patreon episode that I recorded with him a while ago. It's most of a Patreon episode. I took some parts out that just weren't really relevant, or it's just me talking. I kind of just wanted to let Riley tell some stories. The full episode's on there, but I wanted to put this out on the main feed for many reasons. And if you haven't heard it before, episode 154, Riley joined us and told us what I consider to be one of the best stories to ever be on this podcast. It's about Riley and some friends pretending to be Jewish so that they could sneak onto a birthright trip to Israel when they were young to get a free vacation. And not only that, but just all of the antics that ensued. It sounds fake. This definitely did happen. In fact, I really would love to talk to the guys that he went on this trip with. And I've been trying to find pictures from it. I only found one so far. But maybe I'll be able to follow up with that later. But Riley, you know, he knew so many people and he had so many stories. It's crazy. I wanted to put out this episode and I want to talk about Riley a little bit. I promise I won't turn this into a personal therapy session, even though I maybe do need that this week. But yeah, I wanted to talk about Riley because I think a lot of you guys knew him from the show. There's probably a lot of fans of Power Trip who listen to this, and Riley literally listened to this show. So I want to do it. I just wanted to pay respects in my own way that I can. Riley listened to, yeah, but still, he would text me after every episode. In fact, he was aggressively trying to get a certain dream guest onto this show, and he was making very serious progress with that. In fact, our last conversations were about that. He sent me this person's phone number. Nothing has happened with it yet. I don't know if it ever will. You might even be able to guess who the person is. I'm not going to say who it is. I'm not going to put him on blast. But Riley has was tirelessly working on this for no reason. I did not ask him to. That's just how he was. He was just trying to help. He was going to gain nothing from it. And he was just like that. And since he's passed and people have come out with these stories about him, I've realized that he was like that for so many people all over the world. I've been completely shocked at the range of people coming out and, you know, talking about Riley. He was a friend to so many people. And I think his girlfriend said it best that he treated everybody like his best friend. And he really did. In fact, if you were a fan of Power Trip, I guarantee you he cared just as much about you as he did about me or anybody else he knows. I mean, he treated everybody like an equal, and he was willing to help you and the people he cared about no matter what. He would help you even if you asked him not to help you. which has happened multiple times with me on small scales. Like something like he, you know, like you ask something kind of like passively and you realize it's like going to be too hard for the person to make it happen. He just insists. That's what he was like. And I mean, he had such an effect on the world. I'm still completely devastated days later. I don't know if I'll ever really get over this. And I think there's a lot of people that feel the same way or worse. He was a connector that left a giant hole. And not to mention the hole he leaves in music. I loved Power Trip. They were probably one of my favorite bands. I think what I especially liked about them is that they were, I grew up listening to metal and hardcore and punk. It was really, really important to me growing up. I think it's just like a super, like, I don't want to go into a personal therapy session, but I mean, to me, it was important. I think there's music like that is an outlet for emotions that like, there's really nowhere else to put it. When you're young and you're angry and you have rage and you're confused and frustrated, everything around you doesn't match that when you're young. You know, everything's happy. You're told that everything's supposed to be happy and like the TV shows, and like it's isolating. When you feel those emotions, you don't feel normal. Like you think you're wrong. And for me, like when I first heard music like that, it was huge for me. I was blown away the first time I heard like heavy music that wasn't Limp Bizkit or Korn. Like the first time I heard a hardcore band, I was like, holy shit. Like somebody feels like that, you know? Like there's something for that feeling, you know? And ever since then, like not only that, like that music and the community of a scene and those shows, I just think it's hugely important. It's hugely important to have an outlet for that. And there's not many outlets like that left. There's no demand. I mean, it's very hard to be in a band like that, because you don't start a metal band telling yourself like, oh yeah, we're going to be millionaires from this. No, like you start a hardcore band, you start a metal band or a punk band, like expecting to play rooms, like literal rooms where there's more people on stage than there are in the crowd. That's like usually the path. Power Trip was getting big as you can be. And I think they are going to get bigger. They were really like paving a way. They were an accessible band, and they didn't make any compromises musically. They were the real deal. But I think for a lot of people, it was like the first band of that genre that they ever listened to. And I was always so thrilled when I would hear somebody say that. And there's been some comments on my like Instagram posts and stuff, and people who have said that they started listening to this band from the podcast. That makes me so happy. Like, I mean, this is, you know, this music and like the music scene was, you know, a big part. It was a big deal to me growing up. And it's just like something that I'm happy to see somebody experience, too, especially for the first time at their show. At the Power Trip shows, I would always be able to tell when there was somebody in the crowd who had never been to a show like that, but was doing it for the first time and loved it and like possibly needed it real bad, you know, like really letting loose. You could always recognize that, and it made me super, super happy. And I mean, I bring this all up to say that there's not any outlets for that anymore. There's very, very few, and those feelings still exist, and they're probably more prevalent than ever, but there's not a constructive place to put those feelings. There's nowhere you could just go work those out and leave them there and be with other people that feel the same way. There's not much of that anymore. And when there's not that, it's really isolating. And I have to imagine that it's maybe even worse now for everybody, like in the world of like TikTok and stuff, to be feeling those that way. And culture is even more algorithmic now, where you have like like social media like literally prefers videos featuring people that are smiling. It's just, I mean, we live in a really heavy era, and there's no, it's hard to be a band like that. If you want, there's no path to success. You don't start a hardcore band or a metal band thinking that like, oh this is a get rich quick scheme. You know, we're going to be on the radio. You don't do that. You do it expecting to be playing shows where there's more people on stage than in the crowd. And the only way to make something like that happen is to build a scene yourself piece by piece, which is exactly what Riley did. And Riley was like a leader in that sense. And Power Trip not only built their own scene, they grew out of it, and they got big enough that they were really just paving the way for a genre, the genre really itself. And I was so happy and so excited to see that growth. That's unusual. And Riley, beyond just being the singer of a band, he was really like paving the way for something big. And he had big dreams. So that's another reason why I'm really gutted by this. You know, it's much bigger than just losing somebody you know. Losing a friend is one thing. It is really hard to lose a friend and just be like, oh, I don't get to see that person again. That's hard. But I was a fan of this band. And more than that, I think Riley was just doing something objectively good for the world. He's a force for good in the world, and a connector, and really like the brain of a large machine consisting of so many people and different facets and all different communities. He was the glue that held them together, and pulling that apart, like just plucking him from that, is such a void. It leaves such a void, and it's like just imagining a world without Riley to me is so hard to think about. And to know that there's nobody that could really replace a guy like that. I apologize if I'm rambling, but it's very sad. Very sad to lose him. So this episode is about is me and Riley. This was a Patreon episode we recorded. He was such a good storyteller. Like on top of how many people he helped, this man knew how to tell a story, and he knew how to talk. Really knew how to talk. He had stories for days. There was a time when I was trying to call an Uber. In fact, I did call an Uber. I had to cancel several of them because Riley was standing outside with me and Chelsea and told us this story that ended up being like an hour and a half long with all of these twists and turns. And it was a really good story. I remember it. I'm not going to retell it because I could never do it justice. There were so many twists and turns. And it was one of those things where, like, next thing you know, like, we went outside to call an Uber, and next thing you know, it's like an hour and a half later, and I'm standing in the middle of the street, like, listening to Riley finish this story up. He could just do it on command and completely encapsulate you. And I know I mentioned the Israel story, episode 154, Birthright. If you've never heard that one, you got to go back and listen to it. I mean, it's just a bonkers story. He's lived a very, very big, full life, and met so many people. I've just been completely baffled by the people who have come out of the woodwork, who Riley was friends with. I mean, he was just constantly living, two times as much as me. He was just going full force at all times. In fact, this episode that we recorded, makes me really sad to think about, because this is the last time I saw him in person. This was in December. This was their last tour. He was texting me that he was coming into town, and we wanted to hang out, but he was just saying like that he is exhausted and hasn't showered or he hasn't slept in 24 hours. He can't sleep on this bus because it's just like freezing and like bouncing around, and he needs to shower, but they don't have a hotel yet. And he was just bitching. I'm like, dude, please, like, come over and shower. I have a house now. Like, please, I have, like, you could take a nap, shower, just, like, come through. We don't have to hang out. Like, I'm working. just come through and like use my house and chill, like please. And he's like, okay, actually that sounds good, I will. He came through, took a very much needed shower, and then was going to take a nap, but like literally like a little kid, I like couldn't get him to take a nap. He wanted to record an episode of the podcast. And I was like, dude, please, like, just like fucking nap, dude. You didn't sleep last night. Like, I was tired looking at him, you know, I was feeling how tired he was, but he like cracked open a monster or something. And he's like, no, let's record, man. Like, I'll be fine. And, just wouldn't do it. But, we ended up recording this episode. It's cool that I have the conversation recorded. You know, like not. That's the hardest part about losing somebody is like you want to talk to them one more time, and you can't. But it's nice that I have these recorded, I guess. Some of these stories, I'm glad that I have them just preserved, you know, because he had so many of them. But man, I don't know. I'm not going to be getting over this anytime soon. This is really, really fucking hard and surprising. In fact, I'm definitely still in shock. Like, I don't, like, this feels completely made up talking about it right now. I'm like, it sounds like I feel like I'm like reading a script eulogizing Riley. Nothing about this year feels real, and especially not this. Yeah, without further ado, this is previously a Patreon episode with me and Riley. I just described when we recorded it. I thought it would be good to put it out on the made feed. And yeah, on behalf of, myself, Brandon, yeah, but still, and our listeners, rest in peace, Riley Gale. We'll miss you and we love you. All right, everybody. Welcome to an episode of Yeah, But Still. I don't know what it's going to be exactly, but it's me, Jack, here by myself. And I have, Riley from Power Trip returning to the podcast.
I'm once back again. I just showed up.
Yeah, you're actually, I mean, I don't know. We kind of planned on doing this, but you really came over here with your Garnier Fructis.
I did.
Shampoo over there.
I have, you know, you gotta have some nice shampoo.
I mean, I was
trying
to, so I was trying to get you on the pod.
Yeah.
And we were going to do it, but then you didn't sleep last night. And you're kind of telling me about your touring situation. And I honestly was just like, dude, do you need to take a bath? Like, you want to just come over and use my couch?
I highly considered it. If I knew that you had such a nice bath, I would have brought like an Epsom salt bomb or something. And
I have some salts if you needed them.
Just spread out, but
lit some candles.
Yeah. We're in this thing called the bandwagon. It's what you would use, I guess, between touring in a van and like a full tour bus. But essentially, it's like a redneck camper built on the back of a small Freightliner. It's like a moving truck with bunks and
it's like
a common area.
It's like a box truck.
Yeah.
And built it out.
Yeah. So there's no like suspension or anything on it. There's a generator that runs inside of it. So it's
two
like
axles.
Always loud.
For the truck heads, it's a two-axle.
Two-axle. It's like a small Freightliner that tows it, so they're not connected.
Yeah.
And then we drag a trailer, but it's like being in a boat. You feel every bump in the road, you know, like some of the guys are in these top bunks that are like 10 feet off the ground. So it like the heavy guys have to sleep in the top. If I slept in the top, I would actually get thrown out of the bunk.
Have you been thrown out of the bunk before?
I have been thrown out of the bunk before.
Damn.
It does not feel good. We had our merch guy on another tour get thrown out of like the top bunk, and he like fell on this table and fucked himself up so bad that he had to like go get checked out, and like he herniated a disc or some shit like that.
Yeah,
he got hurt his sciatica. So if they're, you know,
touring's not glamorous. People say it.
Let's
people say that.
Let's be real.
But I mean,
at
I've
our
experienced
level,
it firsthand a little bit.
Yeah.
I took photos on tour with Waves for a little while. But not even a full leg of the tour.
Shout out.
Yeah,
shout
out
to Waves.
Shout out.
Homies.
It was just like they had a sprinter. It's not even the comfort thing is one, you know, like you're, you know, it sucks being on the road that long.
Yeah.
But it's just like if one person gets sick, everybody gets sick. Oh, and then everybody's always a little sick somehow.
This thing is like an infection incubator because there's not really a lot of way to circulate.
Yeah.
And it's been cold most of the places that we are, so we're not running the AC that usually pumps in fresh air. So like the heater is just like a space heater.
Oh yeah.
So you just have like this stale air cooking overnight while everyone is like coughing and farting and just like
that's the worst part. It's definitely worse for bands.
I
could see a tour being okay for like a DJ or something, but like when you get that many dudes in one vehicle.
It is remarkably similar to going to county jail.
Have you gone to county jail?
One time, not long. It didn't do a lot of time, but you know, I've also watched, you know, 90 Days In or whatever. Yeah. So we all have our little, you know, it's like our little pod, and we have like a common area where we can basically make the equivalent of prison food. It's like sandwiches.
Yeah.
We bought a $10 toaster oven. And there's a microwave, but it's like, yeah, a lot of like ramen
sandwiches. You fuck
sandwiches.
Your guitarist for protection.
Yes. Yeah. 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 I make him. I make him put his hand in my pocket and walk around with
you
me.
You take it too serious. You're like wearing a hairnet.
Yeah.
You're like, bro, I'll blow you for protection. I don't want to get beat up, bro.
It's like, I really want to make a Frito pie. I'll blow you for that bag of Fritos.
Yeah,
over there.
Exactly.
But yeah, every day we get out, we get let out into Gen Pop for a few hours, which is like the show.
Yep.
And then our set is like our yard time. You know,
oh, yeah,
like
working
that's
out.
That's where we're like working out. You know?
Yeah. And then you could get stabbed.
And then it's like, I get shit thrown at me. Yeah, fights break out.
Yep.
Yeah. It's where the rioting happens. And then we get shuttled onto this thing and we drive overnight and I don't sleep while it's moving. So I've basically been doing a lot of like sleeping during the day. So
the plan just sounded rough.
It's
because you were like trying to explain it to me when we were planning on like the logistics. That's the work that goes into this podcast mostly, is like figuring out when the fuck we could do it. But like,
yeah,
it was just like, yeah, we're going to drive in overnight. So I'll wake up at the Regent tomorrow morning and text you.
Yes.
And so at like 10 a.m. you texted me just like, bro, I didn't sleep. Like,
yeah.
And you're just in downtown L.A. Like, that's a terrible place to find yourself. No sleep, you just wake up in downtown LA in the rain.
You know what was crazy? I walked to the Starbucks to really have a morning relief, and the Starbucks there did not have a public restroom.
Oh, yeah.
It was the only Starbucks I've been in ever, like even in New York, that doesn't have, usually that's the band, like if the venue isn't open, that's the band go-to, is like find a Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't use it there, so yeah.
You didn't see it, or they didn't let you?
No, they just wouldn't let me.
They might have thought you were homeless.
Like, yeah, I look a little homeless right now. Yeah, 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 yeah. It happens. I'm not used to getting
walking in with a towel.
Just the towel, like
that sucks.
Looking like I'm in a bird bath.
I mean, I'm gonna sound insensitive here.
No,
and I do not feel. You know, I feel for the homeless. In fact, Brandon's volunteering for the homeless right now. But have you ever been in a bathroom where a homeless guy is doing like the full shower experience in the bathroom?
Oh yeah. Oh, the truck stops.
Yeah.
Like
it's just like a
lot of the truckers just like won't shower. They'll just bird bath. So we'll be in like a Flying J or something, and there'll be a guy who smells horrible, and he thinks that like putting some of that like lava grease, super thick industrial soap, like on them and washing their faces like enough, and it's like
they're just turning this.
You smell
dirt
like
into
you've
mist.
Been shitting your pants for a week straight.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just essential oils, but of dirt.
And those,
it's a bad experience.
Those. We've spent a lot of times in truck stops on this tour, and I've gotten to learn truck stop showers are incredible.
Really,
you get this like whole private room. They clean it after you every time. It's like a very nice experience, and they're cheap as hell. They're like $3 or something like that.
That's not too
bad.
And
you can spend as much time in there, shit, shower, shave, you know, take your time, relax. And then, like, you know, but these guys, you know, these people out there on the road, they just refuse to use it. We've seen the most gnarly people we've seen on this tour are always at the truck stops. And
if I was
like
the mayor of L.A., if I was Eric Garcetti, I would just build some Flying J truck stops around the city to help the homeless community.
That wouldn't be a bad idea. I mean, if they have a couple bucks and they want to go in and shower.
Just
yeah, yeah.
Work with
Flying J.
There's Flying J truck stops all over LA.
They just
LA
need
now.
To make it like a homeless/trucker lounge.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be a great open drug market too.
Absolutely. I mean, it already exists, but yes. There's, do you see some crazy shit at the truck stops?
I mean, I haven't seen anything crazy per se. We had a really wild part on this tour where we got trapped in Cheyenne, Wyoming on like this huge winter tour.
Ooh.
And I posted a video of it, but it was like, it wasn't snowing, but the wind was so bad. It was 18 degrees outside, felt like -1. And the snow was just blowing where there was no visibility, and we were trapped there for like a whole day. So I didn't really leave because it was like too miserable to walk over to the truck stop. But when I got up the next day, there was like a McDonald's within like 25 yards of me, but the visibility was so low that we just couldn't see it. And like, I guess a bunch of the rest of the band tried to go eat at Denny's, and they like were making up items on the fly because they had like served 700 people who were just trapped because all the highways were closed. Yeah. So one of our our bass player got like a chicken tender sandwich, and it was like chicken tenders between like two pieces of toast, not even like Texas toast. I think a piece of lettuce and like some mayonnaise, and he was like, what? And they're like, okay, we're not going to charge you. We know they knew that this was just
like, giving you
food.
You're like, you could only have one option today
enough,
is food.
Eat this.
Yeah. It's food. It costs $12. It's a flat rate. We're just going to give you food.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, spend a lot of time in Walmart parking lots.
That's not the time when you guys almost froze to death, right?
No, that was back in 2016. So the first time we used the bandwagon tour, we left this show in Norfolk to get to New York. We had to like move around a bunch of shows. New York was supposed to be on a Saturday. I got moved to a Monday or whatever. But as soon as we left, the worst storm in the Eastern Seaboard hit at, like, right when we left. It was the worst in 100 years, and we had to drive through it, and the generator went out. So, and you're not connected to the driver. Our driver was, it was his first time driving a bandwagon. He was pretty inexperienced. Obviously, we got out alive, but it just goes, the generator goes out and goes pitch black. There's no source of power to the back of that.
You guys are just cargo.
So, yeah, we're just cargo. So we're sitting in the dark, huddled together. There's like ice forming on the inside because it's just like a thin sheet of metal surrounding the whole thing. We're just like drinking whiskey to stay warm. We're considering opening the windows and burning trash for warmth. And we just like drink until we can't anymore and climb in our bunks. And for like 8 hours, just have this like near-death experience where everyone's like, iPods and iPhones are dying, and we're like, well, this is it any minute now. I remember our driver pulled over to get gas, and he was like trying to rip start the generator, and he's just like having a mental breakdown, just screaming out, cocksucking motherfucker, I'm gonna kill myself, all this crazy shit. And then that Blind Lemon song No Rain starts to kick in. So it's like,
oh my, at the gas station.
And then, yeah, and the lyrics kick in, and I'm like, this is the last thing I'm going to hear before I die.
That would be awful.
Yeah, it was like an 8-hour near-death experience just ongoing. And we got there alive, but it was like, it was so terrifying. So we've had worse experiences in these things. But
dude, I don't know if I've ever told this story on the podcast, but if please. I have, I'll keep it brief. But it was when I was a very young production assistant in Chicago, and I was doing this. I thought it was like,
you lived in Chicago?
Yeah, I'm from Chicago.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. But like at that point, I thought everything was like a great opportunity. So I was like a production assistant working for like one guy who's probably like the equivalent of me now. He's like a director, okay. And he was like directing something for the White Sox, but it was just like three people working with him.
Sure.
And we were shooting in the stadium during the winter inside. So we were inside the stadium in like a box or whatever doing
Wrigley?
White Sox.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Oh, so, okay. All right.
Yeah, U.S. Cellular, I think it's called now. Yeah. But so we do this for like 3 days, and this snowstorm keeps getting worse. And I'm getting like slowly getting sick.
What year is this? Was this the year of one of the polar vortexes?
Yes.
Yes, I was living
this
in
was like
Chicago
a famous
at the time.
Blizzard.
Oh,
you'll,
yeah.
Once, later in the story, you'll know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about if you lived there. Mm-hmm. But so like in Soldier Field's on the south side. I live
right.
in Wicker Park, which is like northwest side.
Yeah. I was in Humboldt.
But so this shoot on the third day is going, and I'm like, I'm doing some kind of camera job. I think I was operating B-cam. And I should not have even gone to this shoot, but it was one of those, it was so small that
what's
like...
What's a beat cam?
It's like the second camera. It's not like the most important one, but it's like a second camera angle. But I kept like, I had the stomach flu at this point, so I would like excuse myself to go vomit in mm-hmm. the bathroom, then come back and not tell anybody. And the director knew, I eventually told him, I'm like, dude, I'm very sick. But he's like, just hold it together. Like this guy should have sent me home. He was like kind of an asshole.
How long is this day, this shooting day?
Like, you know, 12 hours.
Okay, yeah.
And at this point, I'm like, the blizzard's like happening. We're the only ones in the stadium, though. And the guy, the field manager keeps coming or whatever, the groundskeeper, he's like, keeps coming. He's like, you guys got to get out of here soon. There's like a blizzard.
Yeah.
And he's like, just a little bit more. The director's like, a little bit longer, a little bit longer. And then finally, like the field manager, the groundskeeper is like, I'm getting out of here. Like, you guys have to pack up and go.
Yeah.
Like, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
And right before this happened, I'm watching like billboards fall down, like damage happening to the stadium.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like there's like, they have these huge, huge banners, you know, that kind of go over billboards.
Right.
They're like coming down and they're so huge. They're covering like the seats and like whipping around this empty stadium.
Damn.
And I'm like dizzy.
That's gotta
so
be a
we,
crazy
like, yeah,
scene.
Yeah. So we finally like, we pack it up. He's still, I'm like telling him, like, dude, can we just leave the gear here and like, we'll come get it tomorrow, can we like leave everything, like blah blah, and he's like making us do shit. And eventually he's like, all right, we'll leave the gear, just take the van home. And I'm like trying to I don't know, I guess it was like my only way home, and also like I was like, can somebody else drive, dude? I'm like, this is really tough. And he was like, sorry, you know, like he's going to his hotel. And so I have to drive down Lakeshore Drive in this empty 12 passenger van, which those are not really meant to be driven without like passengers
a lot of stuff
or gear
in it. Yeah, because
it's like the back will just skid out.
Yes,
if there's nothing in it.
Yes.
So I just start driving, and this I'm like sicker than I've ever been. Now I have like a fever and I'm throwing up basically constantly.
Yeah.
And I just power through. I hop on Lakeshore.
Did you throw up while you're driving?
All the time. So window,
like,
window down,
window
it's
down,
snowing in my face.
Yeah.
And the visibility is so low I can't see anyway. So I'm like tears in my eyes, I'm like puking on the side of the van and like on myself, and like I literally can't see anything, so I'm just like praying. And like I could kind of see a red light in front of me of like another car, and I've driven this route, this highway, so many times I could kind of like tell where I am. And dude, it's just I'm like fishtailing all over this giant highway
as soon as you hit the brake.
Like literally not like there's no point where I'm driving normally. I'm like literally just fishtailing around the highway, and I'm like, I've already accepted, like, I'm going to crash the van at some point.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. I would like to get not on Lakeshore Drive. Hopefully I crash, like, later so I could, like, walk somewhere that's not next to the lake.
Yeah.
I'm, like, literally assuming, like, I will crash. Like, this is crazy. And so I somehow make it, like, just by puking and, like, sheer luck, I make it, like,
to
an exit. Yeah. Past Lakeshore Drive, I get off, like, in the loop, and my friend's house is like, I know a friend lives like over there, and so like I'm trying to drive around like downtown Chicago and like park it so that I could like walk somewhere. And I just fucking like give up because I'm so just distraught, and I'm like, dude, I don't know, I'm like, I'm gonna leave the van.
Yeah.
So I like leave it on, if you're from Chicago you'll know, I was like State Street and like fucking Wacker is like I don't know, like like somewhere like really populated.
Yes.
I leave it like in an intersection. There's like nobody around. I'm like, dude, like they could tow it. Like they'll either tow it and I'll just pick it up and like pay the fee.
Yeah.
Safely. Like it'll be better for a tow truck to get rid
of
it. Sure. Or they won't tow it. I don't know. Maybe I'll find it tomorrow. I'm like, I need to sleep. So I like go, it's full blizzard, and I like go and pass out for like 16 hours because I'm so sick.
You finally make it to your place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, wake up, and like I see on the TV, I wake up like noon, so it's like I'm like, oh, the van's gotta be gone. But I wake up and like the TV, it's that whole story about like there's like 600 cars abandoned on Lakeshore Drive. And they show the aerial footage.
I remember
so,
this.
Like,
yeah.
You weren't even allowed to drive on it. There's like cops making people stop and leave their cars.
Yeah.
And not only that, there's cars all over the place, like the highway of death or something.
So
by a sheer miracle, I was like fishtailing and not hitting cars that were abandoned. And like nobody stopped me.
Oh, because you couldn't even see them because they're turned off.
Yeah. And I was like not even allowed to drive on it. Like there should have been like, there probably were cops that I passed.
Sure.
But I just wasn't paying attention.
Or the was it a white van?
It was it was like a white
van. So like maybe the visibility, they didn't even see
you. It was so low,
you.
I couldn't even see anything in front of me.
Yeah, yeah.
But the sheer luck, and then I go outside and like, this is like a record blizzard. So of course, like the van's in the middle of this busy intersection, but there's nobody around. It's a fucking ghost town on a Tuesday or whatever.
Yeah.
And I had to like hire some guys to just, you know, snowblow me out or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I managed to like go actually park it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so right. So on
so
that,
it all worked out.
On that hell ride where the generator went out, we got stuck in this this gas station parking lot with, and there was like six truckers stuck there too, and these two guys running this gas station wouldn't get someone. We're in like the middle of Maryland, and they wouldn't get someone to come out and plow, or they were like all the plowers are busy or whatever. And so we started like we had like 100 feet to get out of this lot, and we start like taking shovels and everything and digging like 3 foot snow, like paths,
Jesus,
like foot by foot, and just like inching the bandwagon forward. And then our bass player finds like a son and his dad clearing out like their farm driveway up the hill a little bit, and they've got like a mini Caterpillar. So we offer them a bunch of money, and the kid comes down and clears us out for free in like 15 minutes. Really cool. But I noticed as we were leaving, the two attendants at the gas station left their keys in the front door of the
gas
station.
The gas station refused to help you guys.
They
right?
were refusing to help. People are like, you can't do this. Like, we're basically being held against our will. Like, it's your job to get someone
to
like,
plow your own gas
you're
station.
Not you shouldn't be letting people drive into this gas station if they can't drive out.
Yeah.
This is like bullshit. And and so I grabbed their keys out of the front door and I was, you know, jangled them, and I was like, hey boys, do you need these? And they both look up and they're like, uh-oh. And I just launched them as hard and as far as I can into like the biggest like snow pile I can see. And
God.
I was like, good luck getting home tonight, assholes. So that was some nice little revenge.
This is a really
story,
funny episode so far. Just like hardships.
Just hard. But it's how cool is
this
it?
Is
like when you get
Brandon's
through
not
that,
here.
When you get through that and you're like, I did that.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, I survived that. Like, it's like, I don't think of myself as like this big badass person who can put up with a lot of punishment, but then you go through something that dark and you're like, I can handle
just like really
I can handle a lot, you know.
Yeah.
My funny story, well, it's not hilarious, but it's pretty
oh, by
pretty
the way,
funny,
the worst part is that I told that stupid fucking director all that shit, like what I went through,
and
he was
didn't
like
want to help
he
you
was
at
just
all.
Like
sorry.
This was like an LA guy to me. He was from LA, I think. I should track him down and see what he's up to, that motherfucker. But I told him, and he's like, oh man, that sucks. And then he's like, you could be there today though, right? And I'm like,
it's like, you have no idea
no,
what I've been through.
What?
You have
and
no
he was
concept.
Like, guilted me into like, we took one day off, but then we had to go do another shoot.
It's insane
the day after.
That he kept pushing it.
Oh yeah.
So we had this show. I was living there, and we had this show in Houston that I was supposed to fly out for, and I was, like, really worried because it had been snowing, and it was, like, you know, in the negatives outside with the wind chill and everything, and I woke up early to catch this flight, and it's clear outside, so I'm like, all right, maybe I'll be able to leave mm-hmm. and make this show, and then I check the weather, and it's negative 35 outside.
Jesus.
And I jokingly said to like my roommate at the time, I was like, I wonder what temperature jet fuel freezes at, because it looks clear outside, but it's so cold. Can like these planes take off?
Yeah.
And then I looked it up and it's like negative 35 is where jet
oh my
fuel
God.
Starts to freeze at. So I, you know, get contact with the airport, and it's like nothing's going in or out because, like, once they get on the ground, it's so cold that that gasoline just turns to slush.
Yeah.
And once you get up in the air, it could be worse. I think it warms up once it gets churning, but either way, it was so cold that, like, no flights could leave because they had, like, a fucking Slurpee in there inside their airplanes. So that was, like, probably the craziest, like, cold story that I've got
that sucks.
From there. I mean, that was a wild. That was a wild 2 years to live in Chicago.
Oh, wait. Also, let's get out of the pain department because I know another story you needed to tell. Let's do something positive. Get by the way, I'm like, I was a little distracted because I was thinking about that director.
Yeah, and
because he is
did you
like,
find him?
I'm close because it's funny. I've had the same email address for so long.
Yeah.
And, like, the search terms have brought me back to places where I'm, like, trying to find, like,
it's
awful
great.
Work.
It's great.
Yeah. But I was trying to find it because I, like...
Google never lets go of anything.
I thought that was really important at the time.
Sure.
But now I'm, like, because I am in the shoes of the dude who was, like, hiring me, I'm like, oh, dude, that's just, like, so not worth it to put, like, a kid through.
Yeah.
Like, if I was shooting some, like, dumb internal, like, White Sox...
If
you
were,
know, like, it was like we're interviewing like White Sox like management.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, I would just be like, dude, why am I not gonna shoot this in a blizzard?
What
like,
if that dude was like born and raised in Chicago and he was just like, you wimp?
Yeah,
you know, this is that you should be used to this by now or something like that. But
there's
a level where it gets so cold that
it was
like
the ultimate non-union.
You literally kill you. You know.
Yeah.
They've got like squads of home, you know, cops rounding up homeless people so they don't freeze to death, and they still have like 12 or 13 people die from exposure every year.
But what I was gonna make you tell you have two stories right now. You just spoiler alert.
Okay.
Well, I'll let you start.
Yeah, let's
you
go.
You met Ice-T.
Okay,
and
so
if we told this on the last, we scanned it. We were trying to make sure you didn't tell us
episode. I don't think we did, but I think maybe I told you this like in an outside conversation. But
yeah.
So my exclusive news to bring the podcast, because I like to bring something fresh to you guys every time. First, it was Sebastian Bach.
Yep, that was huge.
Video. That was pretty big. This is pretty big, too. I just got done finishing, basically writing and tracking a song for the next Body Count record. So I've been
fucking
collaborating
insane.
With Ice-T. So I guess I'll tell the origin story behind that because it's pretty funny. We played a festival. I believe it was this fest called Aftershock in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, this is great. We were supposed to go on at like 2 or 3 o'clock. And our drummer's from Houston. And it was like game 7 of the like the league. Like the league finals, like to go to the World Series or whatever. I think it was Astros Yankees. He's an Astros fan. They end up winning.
Mm-hmm.
He gets so drunk he misses his flight, right? So like he's like, I can get in by like 4 o'clock, and we somehow convinced this festival to like push the show back for us. We end up playing over like Steel Panther or something. They keep our stage open later so we can still play the show. So he just got trashed, missed his flight. But because of that, excuse me, Ice-T ends up catching the set. And our tour manager at the time, so like we get done. I didn't know he had caught the set at all. Our tour manager comes in. He's like, hey, Riley, you're being summoned to Ice-T's dressing room. I guess.
That's so sick.
I guess he saw the set or something and wants to say what's up. And I was like, okay. And I was like, please come with me. I don't want to go alone. I don't know what this is going to be like. And I go in there and it's like the room's packed. There's probably like 8 to 11 dudes in there. He's got like 3 bodyguards, the whole band. His son is in there, whatever. So I walk in and he's like, oh, look who it is. Lil Jumpy Mane over here. And he's like, you guys were fucking killer. And then he was being really cool, started asking a lot of like nice, sincere questions, and like it was just very chill. But the best part is our tour manager at the time was like, I don't want to be another body in the room, but T, I got to tell you, the first time I ever masturbated to completion was to the back of the Power record, where you got that chick in a thong holding like an AK-47 or whatever. And the whole room just like blows up with laughter. And I was like, that's pretty funny, right? And then out of nowhere, Ice-T's son, he's like, yo, man, that's my mom. And so it turns out that that was Ice-T's first wife that he had a son with. So it was great because I feel like
iconic
it was like
iconic album art, by
like
the way.
Like, yeah, totally. Oh, totally. And it was just, he just kind of was like, well, I'm out of here, and just got the fuck out of there.
It's front and back, right?
Yes. Okay, yeah. Yeah. So, I felt like that was a good little, like, they thought that was so funny. So I was like, great. We left him with like a nice little memory. Met Ice-T. We gave him a shirt. He's like rocked it on stage. Cool. And then a couple weeks before this tour, we leave, before we're leaving, I get hit up by some people, and they're like, Ice-T wants you to track this Body Count song. And I'm like, okay, what do you guys want to do? Do you want me to like get in the studio with Ice? Like, what's the deal? And they're like, well, he's recording SVU right now in New York, and he basically has a studio on call and just shows up whenever he feels like it. So I could have been flown out there, sat around for a week, and maybe he didn't meet me at all. And then the day I left, you know, like Tuesday on like a 4 a.m., he wants to go into the studio or whatever. So they send me the music to this song, and they're like, just, we think you're a good songwriter, try and craft something. So I sort of came up with this idea where, you know, it's got like a very traditional song structure. So I did like a, you know, like a verse chorus sort of thing. And I had my friend Emotional Zan come into the studio. He's a local Dallas rapper, really great kid, like really talented. And I had him come in and freestyle where I thought Ice-T should be over the song. And so we just send them over the stuff, and we're like, look, you guys can use this, you can tank it, whatever. But they came back super excited, to the point where like Ice-T even used some of my friend's lines. And this kid's only like 21, so he's freaking out. And I wish I could play the song for everyone.
I heard it. It's really good.
Yeah, it's
and
it's,
it gets
it's
me
catchy.
Excited too, because I'm a Body Count fan.
Yeah,
and it sounds like it's the way you would want a new Body Count album to sound.
The great thing is like, I feel like they really, they didn't force it. Like, it feels like a song that I should be on.
Yeah.
That we wrote together. And I came up with the concept for it, about the story about this police officer, Amber Geiger. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know about this, but this is a really interesting story. In Dallas, I guess, about a year ago, this cop came home, pretty sure she was drunk. And she thought she was entering her apartment, and she enters the wrong apartment and sees a guy just on his couch watching TV, and she fucking shoots him dead, right?
Yeah.
This
got charged, right?
She got charged, she got convicted. It's like 10 years, if that or whatever. But the really fucked up thing is the main witness was supposed to testify. There was a guy who I think lived across from the other apartment. So he heard basically some commotion, some words, and then her shooting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like a very key witness, and he was going to testify again in a civil suit against the DPD. And then a week after she got convicted, this guy gets murdered.
Oh my God.
In a bad drug deal.
I remember this.
And but the thing is where the drug deal went down, my girlfriend and I lived in that apartment complex.
No way.
It's gated. It's trolled by police officers constantly. It's like, people are up in your business. There's cameras. Like, there's no way that someone was trying to do
a drug
deal.
It's
in an affluent part of
Dallas. Yeah, I can imagine.
I mean, not affluent, but like, it's in an, no one. The story was that it was a bad weed deal from some guys from Louisiana. It's like, no one drives from Louisiana to pick up a bunch of weed in Dallas. Like, they'll probably more likely drive to Alabama or something mm-hmm. like that. That's just, it's so obviously a fucking hit.
Then why would you meet at like a corporate like apartment complex.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. It,
like
and
the
that's what it was.
Place in the world.
Right. And it's shaded. It's actually tucked underneath the highway. It was like when I found out it was the Atera apartments, I was like, that is the perfect place to do a hit job.
That's crazy.
So it's fucked. And the wild thing is I basically floated that idea over and didn't know how it would go, given Ice plays, you know, a cop on TV, and he was down. Like I think they were really into the idea, because I think he's got the right mindset where it's like, you know, we obviously need like detectives and people to solve murders and rape cases. Like SVU is in a semi-important show in that regard. In showing the good things that
we gotta police get rid of the sickos.
Police that are capable of, well, you know, it shows the good things that police can be capable of, but I think like the frustration, it comes down to those beat cops, the people on the street who just like are allowed to live above the law. Look at that fucking UPS truck shooting.
That was insane.
That is crazy. And that happened in Texas.
Yep.
And it, dude, like these guys just cosplaying.
Oh, wait, the UPS? I thought that was Florida.
Was it Florida?
Yeah,
okay,
Miramar.
Maybe it was Florida. I could have sworn it was outside of Houston.
Pretty
but,
similar states.
But like, hey, let's kill
They're
the driver,
like
the hostage,
cars.
The bystander.
It's a full-on Call of Duty mission.
It looked like when you have like 4 stars in Grand Theft Auto.
No, 100%. Yeah.
It was. It is so surreal to watch that.
It is. It's like an old time thing too.
Yeah.
Because it was like before cops figured out like, oh yeah, we shouldn't. There's no need to chase somebody down who like stole jewels. Like there's insurance.
No.
Also,
we
don't even need to pursue people.
We have detectives for that.
Yeah.
Because if it's worth a certain amount of money, like if it's grand larceny, there's guys who are going to investigate that.
Yeah.
And there's easy ways to track jewelry. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless they're just like,
well, they had a helicopter on the guy too already, I think, too.
It's fucking nuts.
That's
that
why
it
there's so many
in that.
You know, LA is famous for the police chases,
yeah.
But it's because we have all the helicopters. That's why, that's like why there are, I mean, there's a lot that happened here, but it's because it's like a slow pursuit usually.
Yeah.
And they broadcast them.
Yeah.
And there's like a million helicopters all over LA.
Mm-hmm.
So, whereas New York, I don't
and
think
those
you could
things,
just like fly
you
around.
You can't really get away from those.
No, not really. Somebody, there's videos of people doing it though, which is
yeah, funny. I've seen a couple. There's that one of that guy, right? That's LA where he just like, does an epic hop over a fence.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Or like a concrete wall, and he's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I can't remember. Yeah.
There's one where this man must have cleared like a 10-foot wall.
There's
it's wild.
My favorite guy, shout out Stu Mundell on Twitter. It's the KCBS, I think, is the network, but he's like the helicopter pilot for the news camera.
Okay.
But he's really active on Twitter, so like, actually, you find out a lot of like breaking news. He'll be like tweeting it like while it's happening and just like silly stuff, too. He'll be like, you know, on his way home, like drive over something and like tweet it out.
Uh-huh.
But the funniest shit is like because when there's a chase, I'll like turn on the news and it'll be like Stu Mundell, you know, his camera angles. And then like it'll be finished and he'll be like tweeting. I'm like, dude, this man's tweeting from the helicopter.
From the helicopter.
Like, he's 100% tweeting.
He's probably so stoked on his job.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, no.
He has an ill job.
Love it.
Yeah. We get some pretty good police chases in Dallas, actually.
I believe it.
There was one that ended not too far from my house the other day that actually ended in a fatality. It was like a kidnapping, and then they killed the guy.
I'm not going to name any names, but you do live, for the podcast heads, you live pretty close to a certain perfusionist on Twitter that I'm a big fan of. Remember I was trying to ask you about
address.
I don't want to talk about him, but for
are
people
you,
who know what I'm talking about,
are you going to
I'm not doing it.
You're gonna leave
it.
Him alone.
All right, what else?
But the good news was got
Ice
to do
T.
a song with Body Count.
Ice T is the coolest person in my opinion, the coolest person in the world.
He really is.
Can you top that? I mean, a lot of
he has such a woke mindset. Like, you know, he's very open-minded and he's very
he has like five different careers going at
so
once
many
and
careers.
Each one of them is like cooler than I'll ever be.
Yeah.
Just SVU alone.
More successful than anything
SVU
I'll ever
alone,
do.
I mean, that rules.
Yeah.
Like, he could just be that. But then also, of course, his entire rap career. Then you have Body Count.
Yeah.
the gamer Ice-T, and then just his Twitter.
Oh yeah, no, his Twitter alone.
I mean, being
like,
in like a hardcore band and a rapper, and you're on SVU.
Someone's gonna do a book of just like Ice-T quotes.
Oh yeah, he rules.
I love his concept. I love what he said about Twitter, where it's just your own self-curated chat room.
Yeah,
that was a great way to like distill Twitter into what it is.
He is a powerful user, but I mean, he gets mad on there often, which I like. But the funniest is
like, it's like fake mad.
Yeah,
he's like sitting back laughing.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
No, but the funniest is like I'll just wake up and at like 9 a.m. he'll just have a tweet that's just like, clown motherfuckers ...
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't even know what he's mad about.
Yeah.
He's like,
it's
he's
so
always
sick.
Like talking about like, this is my chat room, like I'll block you motherfucker.
Yeah,
like, punk bitch.
I love it.
I still don't know like what people are doing to piss him
or
off
or saying.
Yeah, because you
sure
never get to see it.
I'm sure it's just a bunch of fucking like just robots and Twitter eggs just like assaulting him for being kind of left. You know?
Yeah, maybe.
Because he's super, like, being like, how dare you play a cop, or, and then, I don't know, write songs about killing cops, and it's like, come on.
He's
been doing that for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, like I said, I think SVU is a positive show.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
And they do episodes, like, that are critical of the police. What I want to do...
Totally.
What I want to see is a Dick Wolf... I want to see a spinoff Dick Wolf show where it's just about New York beat cops. Where they don't do anything. They just, like, do stop and frisks. They just, like, harass a bunch of Puerto Rican guys who have, like, illegal tents.
Yes.
And then the rest of the episodes are them eating. Or, like, an entire season arc.
But it's
arc.
Really intense.
It's Or the opposite, where it's, like, the entire season arc, like, the plot of the entire season is, like, somebody's car gets broken into. And then they spend an entire season, like, not showing up. It's like, it takes a whole season for them to finally go and be like, oh, yeah.
think you're screwed, man.
Yeah. Sorry.
Can't do nothing about it.
Yep.
That would be fantastic.
It's just about regular cops.
Yeah, every
in
season
New York.
They never solve a single thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely useless.
It's a good idea. You should do it. What else do you got, Riley?
I don't know. Well...
So your last leg of the tour.
We got 2 days left. I mean, by the time this airs, the tour will be over. But yeah, these are our last shows for 2020, and then we got to get into the studio and like record a new album.
You got to grind.
Yeah, we got to grind. We got to get into the grind.
You guys were one of my top Spotify artists this year.
I saw that. I was really excited to see that.
I mean, you're
that
on
means,
my running
that means
playlist,
a lot.
Though.
It's so funny because I don't run. I don't exercise. Like the set is kind of my like form of exercise, but so many people hit me up just like, did a PR, did my best, you know, like my best 5K, all this stuff, listening to it. I'm like, I love that. Like it's supposed to be, you know, music that fires you the hell up. So
my favorite stories from the episode you were last on, where a guy was like, came back from the military and was like, I've killed people to use
Oh,
music,
that
bro.
That was Code Orange, not me, but not us. But like, it makes me wonder if, you know, there's been any war crimes committed, like while someone's listening to our band. Because we do have, you know, people in the military come up and tell us that they love us all the time. And it's like, I don't, maybe.
You should just ask them, be like, hey man, thank you for your service. By the way, just
did
curious,
you ever
have you done any war crimes of any sort? I'm not actually judging you, actually. I just want to know.
Speaking of war crimes, one time we decided to waterboard our tour manager in our hotel room because we were really wondering what the sensation of waterboarding was. It was like, this is very early days of Power Trip, but we were like, it was like when all the torture stuff was coming out, we were like, let's find out what waterboarding someone is like. So our tour manager walks out from taking a shower and our drummer, our merch guy pin him down. I put a towel over his face. He's screaming. He's like, what is going on? And I'm like, I'm just going to waterboard you. We just want to see what this is like
for
a bit.
Oh my
God. He's like, He's also a Persian man, so he's... Middle Eastern descent.
This sounds like a hate crime.
He got over it. He might have PTSD. I don't know. But
you had to do it to the Persian
guy.
We
did it for like maybe 5 seconds, and he was like, stop. Like, it was, it got really intense really fast. And then I, to be fair, like,
you
put
let
the
him
towel
do it
over my face and, like, did it, and I was like, oh, I see what you mean. Like, you really get this sensation of drowning when you're, like, upside down and that water is just, like, coming out of your, like, going into your sinuses and you
awful.
Can't flush it out. It's
Is he still your tour manager?
Absolutely not.
He quit?
No, he went on to bigger and better things.
Oh, okay.
He's actually Ghost Main's tour manager right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's
Wait, who was?
It's Sherwin. Do you know Sherwin?
No, but my friends work with Ghost Main.
Which ones?
Mike Power and Tim Smith.
Okay, those must
like
be two
management.
People I don't know. So interestingly enough, there's like six people loosely affiliated with me or Power Trip or Texas with Ghost Main. Most people are probably not going to care about this, but like his DJ is one of my like best friends from Texas who had like a lot of drug problems for years, got himself clean. He's been making electronic music forever, and Eric gave him a chance, and he's crushing it. So like, Eric is Ghost Main or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm super proud of him. Our merch guy Hood is actually working for him.
Damn,
a guy,
he's taking all your shit, dude.
Yeah, he's actually taking all of our shit.
Have you ever had beef with other bands?
No, not like outright beef.
Festival beef?
Oh, actually, you know what? Yeah, I'll tell this one.
Okay.
So one time, you're familiar with the band Suicide Silence?
Yeah.
So one time we played this festival with them, and it was in Dallas, so it was on our home turf. And we were playing this stage that was kind of doing like a back and forth thing, and then they were going to do like a 30-minute changeover after our set, and Suicide Silence was going to have the whole stage. Well, apparently, the lighting guy showed up around like 8 a.m. or something like that and set up all their lights and then fucked off. And I didn't know that this was their special lighting rig or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So we start playing the set and we had this weird inside joke that's not worth explaining, but we had a bunch of like champagne bottles and boxes of cereal and we're throwing them around everywhere while we're playing. This is like 2012 or something. No, 20. I can't remember, but it was a while back. Now we take ourselves a little more seriously. But sure. We did this kind of gag at this festival where we were just like throwing shit everywhere. And I guess my mic cable got wrapped around this dude's light and I just yanked it. And I guess I broke the light in it.
Mm.
And the guy from Suicide Silence, it was just like a worker. He was in like a work shirt or whatever.
Yeah.
He's super pissed about this. And I didn't know this, but our drummer was actually playing lead guitar at the time, and he's wearing shades, and he's like ripping into a solo, and this guy is flipping him off like 3 inches from his face, right? So he looks over, and he's like, "What the fuck?" And there's a great video of it, and he just fucking kicks this guy like right in like the like thigh or something, and the guy's like, "Ugh," and he falls back. Well, what happens is he turns around and he grabs one of those champagne bottles and he rears back like he's about to like brain Chris with this bottle. But Chris's back is turned.
Yeah.
And our friends manage to like wrap this guy's arm up and they're like, if you fucking do this, like you're dead. There's like 40 of our friends. It was like Code Orange, Harm's Way. Like all these rotting out, all these bands of friends of ours were backstage watching us.
Yeah.
We had like 300 of our friends up front because then their whole crew starts rushing on stage to all this commotion. They have this huge tour manager guy who is like ready to throw a punch at me. I have our like mic stand keeled back like I'm ready to baseball swing him. And we're sitting there like this if you guys do this, there might be like 12, 18 of y'all. There's 40 to 200 plus of us. Like, you're in our hometown. You're going to get crushed.
Yeah.
And then, like, we managed to defuse the situation. We didn't want to cause a problem, and luckily nobody got hurt. But the kind of – and we didn't have any direct beef with the band. They actually came up and apologized to some of the other members of our band and I guess, like, fired that guy. But the funny thing was is – we go up to the promoter's office to go get some beer, and the lighting guy's in there complaining to the promoter, and he's like, man, there's like a however many $100 light, and like, I'm on the hook for it. And he's kind of just sitting there like, dude, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not paying for it. You can try and go get money out of that band, but good luck. And we like walk in, and he's like, and there's the fucking asshole who kicked me. And like, Chris was just like, do you want to show me where it hurts? Pussy. And like, the dude was like, fuck you. And he was so upset. But I guess after that, like, a couple people from their crew quit. They were just like so embarrassed.
Oh my God. Told.
I ran into a kid who was like, yeah, I quit. Who was doing teching, and like, he was like, yeah, I bailed after that. It was embarrassing. So,
is this video online somewhere?
No, it was it wasn't a big deal or anything. So
you saw a video of it or something, though.
Someone
right?
got a video of it, but I don't think I could dig it up. If I do, I'll be happy to send it to you.
Yeah.
Maybe before the episode hits. But no, there's people, I'm not gonna name names. There's people in certain bands that I really, really don't like, but usually, like, the sad part is that the other members of the band can be great.
Yeah.
You know, like, but no, band beef, we're really easy to get along with, I feel like, you know.
You guys are nice
and
boys.
We go with the flow a lot, you know. It's like, it's just, we've done this for so long, you know, when we see younger bands trying to grind it out, or like, we've seen enough like bigger bands and know when someone's kind of like being an asshole or not, you know, just being extra or whatever. Just
yeah.
Like, so it is what it is. You're not going to get along with everybody. I will not say who, but one time in Europe, at one point in time, I was so mad at an older guy that we were on tour with. He kept like sunning me, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just like, son, back when I saw Bad Brains at CB's, GB's in the day, you know, just trying to fucking cool guy me. And I had the window breaker to the bus, the little like pin, the little like metal pin that you like emergency break
out.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
I had it in my hand, and I was like, if you sun me one more time, I'm going to crack your fucking skull. And he was just looked at me like, I hadn't slept in days. I was like so sick of being around these old men, like just like disrespecting us, sort of. Not all of them.
Like
some.
Lecturing you? Was it that type
it's
of
not
stuff?
Like lecturing, but it's just like their opinions are so much more valid because they were like old,
yeah,
and like around for it or whatever, you know, just kind of like, it's just that old man superiority,
like kind of
it's just condescending. I mean, like, you know what I mean when I say sunning something,
yeah,
like oh, son, back in my day, brr, brr, brr. It's like, dude, shut up, you know,
yeah.
Like, I'll say this guy, if he thinks that he's the dude from the Big Lebowski. He like,
yeah.
He's a California guy who talks and acts like the dude, wears the dude t-shirts. He performs barefoot in bootcut jeans and a straw cowboy hat. Smart metalheads might be able to figure this out.
Yeah,
but
I'm not gonna say.
I don't think you'll figure it out. He's not like a really it's not like a household name. I'll tell you afterwards.
I'm gonna pause it. You could tell me.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know who that is, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretty obscure one, but
yeah, you would have to be a big, a
you'd
deep
have to
metal
be
head.
A really deep metalhead.
Your hair would have to be past the nipples
and
length.
Maybe gray.
Yeah,
maybe
gray. But yeah, just like straight up working at a, you would have to be a metalhead that works at a Blockbuster still somehow.
Yeah.
That's the knowledge.
Yeah.
You have to be working at a VHS rental place now.
We've had a lot
That's
of,
how metal you'd have to be.
We've had a lot of negativity in this episode, I feel like.
Have we?
Not, we just talked a lot about dark things. Me almost killing a guy.
Yep.
You know, a cop shooting an innocent person.
Well, that was
jobs,
that was related
us almost
to you
dying.
Writing a song with Body Count.
Sure.
So that's positive.
I figure we should end on a positive note.
Yes.
So, what would you like to talk about? What should
well,
we
do? Well, you were telling me a little bit ago about Indonesia.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just before we started this tour, we did probably the craziest trip we've ever done as a band. We got invited to the show in Indonesia, which, like, you can't get further away from Dallas, Texas, than Indonesia. I think if you dug a hole through the center of the earth, you'd come up pretty close to Indonesia on the other side.
Yeah.
So we get invited to play this festival, and it's like the only other band I recognize is the 80s band Extreme, known for their hit song More Than Words off their sophomore album Extreme 2 Porno Graffiti. Another big hit of theirs is a song called What the Funk. It's pretty good.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. So it's like 32 hours travel there. You fly from Dallas to Tokyo. You have this crazy layover. Then you fly to Jakarta. And where the show actually was Yoga Jakarta, which, or I might be saying that wrong. It's like Yoga Jakarta, whatever. But it's in the middle of the island. And I didn't know this, but Indonesia is like the third biggest democracy in the world. So we do this crazy flying schedule to get there, and then when you land in Yoga Jakarta and walk out, it's like an open air airport, and as soon as you walk out, it's just like mopeds. You look like you're in like a third world country. And then we get in this van and we're driving through the city for like 30 minutes, and it's like everything you expect from like going to a place like that for the first time. Guys like in the middle of the street selling like chicharrones, yeah, and like just like, and water, and like people zooming in and out, like five, like a family five deep on like one moped, like,
yeah, like the opening credits to a movie,
every
like establishing,
yes,
shots,
yeah, like it was like the opening to The Raid or something, yeah, like that, you know, like, which, yeah, that was Indonesian. And then it's like, you know, guys squatting by like a derelict building, coffee shop, moped, mm-hmm, moped, mechanic place, more guys squatting, moped shop, whatever. So we, but then suddenly out of nowhere, we pull into this like absolutely gorgeous, just blocked off resort. And we get out, and they've got these like lychee drinks for us. They've got like flowers to put on us. There's all these photographers.
Oh, wow.
We've never been treated this way. It's like, it was like we were fucking rock stars, right?
And that's nuts.
And yeah, like this resort was actually like the hotel was converted out of an old temple, so it's got all these like crazy temples everywhere and little shrines and stuff. And they actually like they built a fucking sick like water park quality slide,
huh,
like through a shrine. And that ends up in this pool area. But this resort is like clearly where you're supposed to stay the whole time. It's it's huge. It has like walking paths. It has like a 9-hole golf course. Some of our guys went golfing, and there was like groups of people just like huddled in the bushes watching them. Because there was just like white men playing golf,
yeah,
and they had never seen that before. Or, and like guys, they were wearing like rocker clothes,
yeah, yeah,
you know. So, but they got some of our guys golf, and they like got hooked up with caddies, and they looked surprisingly like minions. It was really cute. They all had like matching outfits on,
yeah,
that were like, that looked like minion outfits but pink,
yeah,
and little hats. It was great. But you're clearly like the food, everything, you're just supposed to stay in this resort area, mm-hmm, right? But we're only there for like 36 hours. So I end up staying up all night, and I like walked out of the resort for a little bit and maybe made it two blocks down the street before I was like, fuck this, I got to go back. Like, it was like, and I do not get sketched out in sketchy,
yeah,
neighborhoods. I usually know how to carry myself, but I was like, this is so eerie, because I didn't see anyone really, but I didn't know like if people were around. I don't, mm-hmm, know like what like the homeless situation is there. So I just like walked back, and then the next morning I told our handler what I had done, and she was like, do not ever do that again.
Oh,
she
my
was
God.
Like, are you serious? Did you really do that? And, you know, like all this stuff. But we had, dude, we had like a press conference that was televised. We found out we were headlining over Extreme, which is crazy.
Oh, nuts.
And then we end up playing the show, and it's the biggest headlining show we've ever played. And it's in a place we've never been on the opposite end of the world.
Yeah.
It was there was probably about 8,000.
They loved it. Did they go crazy?
8,000 people there. Nuts. It was awesome. I cannot wait to go back. We're going to do we're going to do Jakarta and Bali Bali, yeah, next year. And I can't wait to see what it's like because it was so mainstream for them there that I'm wondering if we go back and it's just like we're like a radio band or something over there. I don't know, you know. It was televised on TV, I think. They had like drone footage.
Oh, that's sick. Is there footage online?
I think so. Yeah, there's definitely footage online. It's just,
what was the festival called?
It was called Yoga Rock Arda. So it's like Yoga Rakarta.
I'm looking for it right now.
Maybe. Or if you do Power Trip Extreme Indonesia, maybe it'll come up. But the people there are so nice. It was so cool. Like, it was the most accommodating thing
ever.
Yeah,
I can't find the name of the festival. At least not while I'm like multitasking. I found it, dude.
Yeah.
Dude, we're so white.
I know.
Yoga Rakarta.
Yeah. And it's like
Music festival. It's just the name of the town that we can't pronounce, or the city, rather.
No. Apparently it used to be the capital, and they had like some kind of like,
there's like drone footage of the pit and stuff.
Yeah.
It's at night. Oh, yeah. This is pretty huge.
I mean, it was like outdoor in a field with like a built up stage and everything. It was.
Look at you, rock star mode up here, dude.
I know,
full
man.
On 80s energy. Oh, they love it, dude.
Yeah.
This rules.
It was also incredible watching like 8,000 foreign people sing along to More Than Words.
Yeah.
Which Extreme kind of killed it. They were pretty good. They were pretty good.
They rocked
pretty
it.
Pretty good.
After the video ends, there's like a list of all these sponsors I do not recognize. There's like so many festival sponsors, but they're all like Indonesian companies.
Oh, dude.
But then you also see in there like Hyatt.
We got like a special message from the president of the country. Apparently,
oh, my God.
He's a metalhead. And he was like, I'm sorry, I can't make it. I'm busy. But like, I love to support this festival and I hope you have a great time and like all this stuff.
Wait, who's... Which country has the president or prince who has like that huge back tattoo? It's always showing up in shorts and shit.
I don't know.
Oh my God.
I don't know what
you're talking
about.
Worth like pausing to show you this guy. Hang on. All right. We paused it. This is literally so dumb, but I cannot even you saw me.
That's
try to
a
Google
tough
this.
Google.
It's a really tough Google because I can't even remember.
You gotta get the country.
I can't remember his title or what country he's from. It's a Southeast Asian country, I believe. But it's like he's like either a prince or king or like, I don't think he's an elected official.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a dude who's like powerful in one of those countries, and he has like a ripping back tattoo.
I that reminded me of something, but now I'm starting to fucking lose.
You haven't
it.
Slept, dude.
I know.
I invited you over to take a nap.
I know. I don't even know if I'll have time to. I might have to head back to the venue pretty soon.
Damn.
That's okay. I'll be able to get it.
I was trying to share my sectional couch with
you. You know, it
dude.
Looks really comfortable. Maybe I will.
Yeah, well, give it a shot.
I don't even know what time we're at.
But we could end this.
This turned out a lot better than I expected it to, given
episode?
My mental situation.
Yeah, you need a nap.
Yeah.
Need a nap.
Thank you for having me again.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming back
no
on.
No thanks to Brandon.
Yeah, no thanks to Brandon.
Well, wait. You said he's helping homeless people right now.
Yeah.
Are you lying?
I mean, he's I don't know what he's doing. He's volunteering for... our friend Hayes does homeless work.
He's just out there taking selfies with homeless people.
I know Hayes is doing some work.
Okay.
But
that's good. If they're out helping.
I think Brandon's helping.
Good.
But you know.
Well, good. Never mind. I take it back, Brandon.
He is.
I'm sorry.
I can't confirm the type of work, but he is volunteering for homeless outreach right now. So
good
for you, Brandon.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's a positive note to leave it on.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for coming on.
Maybe I'll see you next year.
Yep.
Yeah. Bye, y'all.